Father, we agree with the song we just sang. You alone have the words of eternal life. And in considering the phrase, reveal your glory through the teaching of your word, this is a humbling activity in both the teaching and the hearing. Thank you for the opportunity to teach. Lord, I'm, even as we sang, profoundly aware that you deserve a better vessel. But we trust that this is the way you get things done, through men. And so we are humbled. I am, and we are, Lord, to hear from you today through your word is a true gift in both the giving and receiving. And help us to receive it as such. And may that grateful receiving be made all the more true because we live it. Because we express it through our doing. And even that, we need your help. And so we joyfully make the request. Help us hear and to apply your word today. That you would reveal your glory. Amen. We're going to be in Nehemiah chapter 6, as Ian mentioned. The wall is nearing completion. You would hope the trouble had stopped. But Sanballat and Tobiah have now returned with their insecurity raised to a fevered pitch. And they have conspired to take out the leader, Nehemiah. They have tried all kinds of things up to this point. And they realize if we want to take this ship down, we must take out the captain. So the last two Sundays that we were together before Easter, in Nehemiah we saw both the outside and the inside attacks on the people of Jerusalem, on the wall builders. Now we're going to see another cycle of outside attack, verses 1 through 14, and inside attacks, 15 through 19. That's for next week. But this time, these attacks are specifically focused on Nehemiah himself, the man. Let me read Nehemiah chapter 6, verses 1 through 14. Then we're going to spend some time just unpacking it. Now when Sanballat and Tobiah and Geshem the Arab and the rest of our enemies heard that they had built the wall, and that there was no breach left in it, although up to that time I had not set the doors in the gates, Sanballat and Geshem sent to me, saying, come and let us meet together at Hekaphurim in the plain of Ono. But they intended to do me harm. And I sent messengers to them, saying, I am doing a great work, and I cannot come down. Why should the work stop while I leave it and come down to you? And they sent to me four times in this way, and I answered them in the same manner. In the same way, Sanballat, for the fifth time, sent his servant to me with an open letter in his hand. In it was written, it is reported among the nations, and Geshem also says it, that you and the Jews intend to rebel. That is why you are building the wall. And according to these reports, you wish to become their king. And you have also set up prophets to proclaim concerning you in Jerusalem. There is a king in Judah. And now the king will hear of these reports. So now come, let us take counsel together. Then I sent to him, saying, no such things as you say have been done, for you are inventing them out of your own mind. For they all wanted to frighten us, thinking Their hands will drop from the work and it will not be done. But now, O God, strengthen my hands. Now when I went to the house of Shemaiah, the son of Deliah, son of Mehetabel, we're giving it our best here, who was confined to his home, he said, let us meet together in the house of God within the temple. Let us close the doors of the temple, for they are coming to kill you. They are coming to kill you by night. But I said, should such a man as I run away? And what man such as I could go into the temple and live? I will not go in. And I understood and I saw that God had not sent him, but he had pronounced the prophecy against me because Tobiah and Sanballat had hired him. For this purpose he was hired, that I should be afraid and act in this way and sin. And so they could give me a bad name in order to taunt me. Remember Tobiah and Sanballat, O my God, according to these things that they did, and also the prophetess Nodiah and the rest of the prophets who wanted to make me afraid. So Nehemiah records here for us three interactions, two in our section today with Sanballat and Geshem and Shemaiah, and this is both an outward and an inward attack on Nehemiah. And the third interaction we're going to cover next week, and that is with Sanballat's cohort, Tobiah. Tobiah is tied to the spiritual leadership of Jerusalem, and we are going to see how his attack on Nehemiah continued from the inside. By the way, all of this is an absolute leadership nightmare. If you've ever been a leader, and many of you have in different capacities, to have outside people questioning your motives and everything that you're doing, but then to stir them up, and then even your own friends are trying to undercut and undermine what it is that you're doing, it is a nightmare. And the fact that Nehemiah actually navigates this so successfully is a testament to the person that God had made him to be, to his resolve to get his job done, and then the truth by which he lives. We need to understand that Nehemiah really navigates this whole situation impeccably. You could create a whole handbook on how to handle opposition just by the way this man handled the immense amount of difficulty that he was receiving in the midst of a gigantic building project. And it is a testament to who God created him to be, his resolve to do his job, and the truth by which he lives. Now, this whole book of Nehemiah has leadership lessons that are innumerous. And so I've been doing a lot of study on Nehemiah. I've been reading books, articles, listening, you know, to podcasts or other sermons. And the principles and the teachings that unpack Nehemiah's account and his abilities capture some of the leadership principles that are contained in this book. But in my mind, nothing that I've listened to anyway has come close to unpacking the intricacies of the lessons that could be learned and gained from the life of Nehemiah and his writing as it pertains to leadership. It's amazing. I'm thinking about even, we'll get done to go back through and to write up something of my own, a little booklet maybe, even on leadership from Nehemiah. But the truths and principles we find in Nehemiah are not just for leaders, but they reach into the lives of all of us, providing instruction and encouragement. I think we've been experiencing a lot of that already, right? We realize it's not just for somebody who's leading, it's for all of us. Now, last time we were in Nehemiah together, you remember Nick was teaching, and he unpacked the last half of chapter 5. Nick, thank you for your work, brother. It was really helpful and good, and he did a great job summarizing the truths of the passage and then packaging them into applicable points for us, remember? Nehemiah knew his job, he did his job, and he did it generously. And so that was our application. Know your job, do your job, do it generously. And then one of the most helpful things, at least for me, that you pulled out of there, Nick, was, and like Nehemiah, when we know our job and we do our job and we do it generously, we become a Christ representative to those around us. Nehemiah became a figure of the Christ to come. Now, in the first half of Nehemiah chapter 6, it's going to become even more obvious that even though Nehemiah knew his job and he did his job and he did his job generously, it didn't win him all friends. He knew his job, he did his job generously, and some people were still not happy with him. And these weren't just distant strangers on the outskirts of the camp. There's people that day to day, and we'll see this as we progress through the rest of the chapter, who are interacting with Nehemiah, and they still are not appreciating nor responding favorable to meet Nehemiah's sacrificial work on their behalf. So the lessons that we're going to be unpacking today are going to follow Nehemiah's examples. And so primarily our application is going to revolve around two main points. The questions for us is how we are going to apply this. The first one is this: how do we respond or how do we react when people don't appreciate our resolve to do our jobs no matter how generously we do them? So if we've been hearing from Nehemiah and we're applying these truths and we know our job and we're doing our job and we're doing it generously and people still don't respond favorably, how do we respond? And secondly, for those of us who are also not just leading but following, how are we supporting those who lead us? In this story, there's a host of people that are actually undercutting and undermining Nehemiah's leadership. Well, some of that applies to us as well. So here are the instructions we will gain today from Nehemiah. Number one, there's five. In response to God and his character, the difficulties of unpacking the importance. It is absolutely necessary that everything that Nehemiah does in the next 4 points hinges on this one point, because Nehemiah believed something particular about the Lord, and that's what changed his life. It's not just, ooh, how can I lead these people? Let me come up with a bunch of leadership points, and I'm just going to start becoming a better leader. Nehemiah starts with who the Lord is and what he has called him to do. And without that, you don't get points 2 through 5. You with me? So in response to God and his character, resolve to do your job. The second instruction we'll gain from Nehemiah today: remember your leaders, consider their labor, and don't contribute to their trouble. The third point: concern yourself with God's abilities and God's will, not man's abilities and man's will. The fourth point: live according to truth, regardless of your feelings and your circumstances. And the fifth point: pray, seek the Lord for both strength and justice. Father, help us as we unpack this together. So we're introduced to this new character, Geshem. He's an Arabian ally of Sanballat and Tobiah. He's been recruited. He's a ringleader of some gossip. And he and Sanballat are going to make some requests of Nehemiah. So they send him a series of five requests in the form of letters. And these letters are sent under the guise of a peace treaty. But as each letter progresses, it becomes obvious that they had no desire for peace at all. It wasn't their intent. Rather, their intent is to stop the restoration of God's city, to stop the restoration of God's people, and to take Nehemiah out of his leadership position because he is effective. He's got a lot of really good things going on. We want to stop the work. These people are going to rally behind this man, and we're going to lose our positions. We're in trouble. We need to take him out. So their initial letter is a request for Nehemiah to meet them about 25 miles north of Jerusalem, outside of the city gates. It's about a day's journey. Nehemiah states, as we read, that he is busy with an important work from which he cannot be deterred, and he says, "I am doing a great work, and I can't come down." In other words, if you want to meet with me, you're going to have to come here. But rather than offering to meet Nehemiah in Jerusalem, Sanballat sends four more letters, four additional messages with the same request to come outside of the safety of the city and to meet. That's verse 4. And each time Nehemiah responds the same way. He tells us that. I responded the same way each time. And his extremely wise response exposes their intentions, which are revealed by their fifth and final, what Nehemiah records as an open letter. And the description of this letter as open is important because it's key in understanding what's actually happening here. So here's a couple things that are important to know about this open letter. So letters between ruling parties were typically written on like a thin sheepskin, like a leather, or some kind of papyrus paper packed together, rolled up, put into a pouch, and then sealed with a signet ring. And that was to validate its authenticity as well as its contents, that it indeed did come from this person. And it was also intended to keep information to getting from unwelcome recipients. They didn't want the information spreading between the leaders. That could cause trouble. But that's exactly what Sanballat intended to do. It's to stir up gossip. It's a false narrative, and he knows it. And it's pressure to make Nehemiah afraid. And so this open letter is filled with false accusations that are leveled specifically against Nehemiah, verses 6 through 7. And there's three of these false accusations in the letter. He says, "You intend to lead the Jews in a rebellion against the Persian king Artaxerxes. You wish to set yourself up as that king in your newly walled city." That's what your intent is. "And you have set up, you have paid false prophets to proclaim your divine rights to the throne." And then Sanballat's letter ends in verse 7, and he says this, "Now the king, Artaxerxes, he's going to hear about this." In other words, Sanballat is threatening that this list of false accusations are going to make it to the Persian king. And again, this intended to fear Nehemiah into doing what he asks. And then he closes this very end and he says, "So, because of all this, come, let us take counsel together." If it's true that Artaxerxes would get wind of what was contained in this letter and believe it, Nehemiah's life and the entire project would be closed down. This final letter is a manipulative power play intended to stir up great amounts of fear in Nehemiah. So he says in verse 9, "For they all wanted to frighten us, thinking their hands will drop from their work and it will not be done." Now, how does Nehemiah respond? We'll talk about that in a little bit. We're going to talk about his responses because they're similar to both of these interactions. But it fails. Sanballat's plans fail. And when these plans fail to bring Nehemiah out of the city, Sanballat and Geshem resort to recruiting someone inside the city. So verses 10 through 14, we see this second interaction with this man called Shemaiah. He is actually, even though they're accusing Nehemiah of hiring prophets, that's actually what they're doing. Isn't that interesting? Oh, you're hiring prophets. Meanwhile, it's them who's really hiring prophets. So this Shemaiah guy is a hired prophet of Sanballat. And we know a few things about Shemaiah from this narrative and the context. We know four in particular. One, he's been hired by Sanballat and Tobiah to be part of their conspiracy against Nehemiah. He also played some kind of a significant role in the temple because he has access to the inner workings and he can actually take Nehemiah into the inner parts of the temple. So he has access to the temple. He and Nehemiah were also familiar with one another because they're sending letters back and forth, and this is a personal invitation with someone that Nehemiah has had personal interactions with previous. And the last thing we know is that he is in some way, he says, homebound. This is a lot of commentaries I was reading was saying this is part of a ruse for him essentially to make himself appear like, hey, Nehemiah, me and you are in the same boat. We're both, you know, fearing for our lives. Come with me and we'll run away together. It's kind of what he's proposing. I don't know if somebody did that with me. I ain't going into a room with them by myself, right? But he's on the run like Nehemiah and he wants him to join him. And just like the other correspondents, Shemaiah is attending to stir up fear. The end of verse 10, he says this, "For they are coming to kill you. They are coming to kill you by night." And by the way, most likely, this is not far off. So this is not like, no way. This is not like, hey, there's going to be 150,000 people in Nashville for the eclipse. No way, right? No, this is probably... it's very likely. But this again is in an effort to stir panic and insecurity in Nehemiah to get him off of his leadership role and to stop his work on rebuilding God's city and his people. But Nehemiah identifies Shemaiah's intent, verse 13, "For this purpose he was hired, that I should be afraid and act this way and sin, so they could give me a bad name in order to taunt me." Excuse me. Shemaiah's invitation into God's house and into the temple with the doors closed is an invitation to sin through both fear and self-preservation. So only priests were allowed in the temple. So Nehemiah, not being a priest, if he entered the temple, he would have had desecrated it and brought himself under God's judgment. And Nehemiah would not disobey God in order to gain safety and to preserve himself. We could unpack that for an entire 45 minutes. Nehemiah refused to disobey God because of fear and self-preservation. So Nehemiah responds again with truth. Should such a man as I run away? And what man such as I could go into the temple and live? I will not go in. So in both instances, Nehemiah's response is similar. I am a particular kind of man. Therefore, I am doing a good work. I will not come down. Should I, such a man as I, run away? I will not go in. Church family, we need to hear this. I am a particular kind of man. Or, some of you would say, I'm a particular kind of woman. I almost said that, but I wouldn't want to do that. I'm a particular kind of person. Therefore, I'm doing a good work. I can't come down. I'm a particular kind of man or woman. I'm a particular kind of person. Therefore, I will not go in. Nehemiah's responses are predicated on two things. Nehemiah realized he knew who he was in relationship to God. He was determined in his resolve. Identity precedes activity. Identity precedes activity. If you don't know who you are, you will not know what you're supposed to do. Nehemiah knew he was a servant of God. Therefore, he knew what his job was, and he also knew how to do it. So he responds accordingly. He resolved in what he was called to do. He did his job. He filled his role. Nehemiah knew that the safest place for him to be is in the center of God's will. The safest place that Nehemiah could possibly live was in obedience to his heavenly Father, his King. And so he says, because of that, I will not come down, I will not go in. I don't care how many leadership classes you take, how many principles you learn. When you come to a point of absolute pressure and your life is on the line, what you really believe comes out. Nehemiah really believed, I belong to the Lord. The safest place for me is in obedience to Him. Therefore, I'm not going in. I'm not coming down. Nehemiah concerned himself with God's abilities and will, not the abilities of men or the will of men. Nehemiah lived out of truth and spoke truth regardless of feeling or circumstances, and he refused to negotiate his job and role in the face of fear. This is really helpful for me personally. Because oftentimes, I know the Lord, I know this is true, and then all of a sudden, fear gets interjected, and I start negotiating my job and my calling. Bad planning, Rob, right? Bad planning, church. If you know your job, and you know how to do your job, and you're doing it generously, don't start adjusting in the face of fear. Nehemiah lived out of truth, and he spoke truth, regardless of feeling or circumstance. And then last, Nehemiah entrusted himself to God in prayerful dependence of both strength to finish the work. So he says in verse 9, but now, O God, strengthen my hands. They want us to drop our hands so the work won't finish. You, O God, strengthen my hands. And he prayed for justice, that God would act in behalf of himself in the people that he couldn't control. And so he says, Lord, remember Tobiah and Sanballat, O my God, according to these things that they did. Strengthen my hands for my job. Hold them accountable for their job. We went through this a few weeks ago, remember? Don't negotiate with the flesh. I want help doing my job. Lord, hold them accountable for their job. Here we see how truth in Nehemiah helped him to navigate fierce opposition. And in much the same manner, those same truths and methods and principles apply to us. All of us, in some way, are leaders and followers. All of us. Moms, dads, big siblings, young men, unmarried, young women, unmarried. We're all leaders. We're all followers in some capacity. As such, in both cases, we all, men and women, have jobs to do. We have roles to fulfill. Now, let me reiterate something that we talked about a few weeks ago and Nick illustrated with his block analogy, remember? When we were in Nehemiah chapter 4, I said this: we can often get caught up in big visions of God's kingdom and neglect small things. When we're talking about building redemptive community together, we're not talking about finding some big ministry project to do, simply obeying in the next 5 minutes. I was thinking about this again today, and I remember how many conferences I was as a young adult thinking about how do I discover the will of the Lord, and how ambiguous and hard I almost always left those talks going, I'm really confused. We've overcomplicated it. Look, if you're going to be a missionary in Tanzania, you are never going to be a missionary in Tanzania in 5 years if you're not obeying the Lord in the next 5 minutes. You can't jump from here to there. We must change our minds and our language about the way we speak when we're talking about building God's kingdom. And this is why I like Nick's block analogy and the examples he assigned to each block. If you're a young mom, up to ears and elbows in diapers and Legos and food prep and nap schedules, and then just trying to carve out some time with your husband, the question is not, what is my part in the building of the kingdom? You are building the kingdom. The question is, how am I going to go about kingdom building today, right here, right now? That's the question. You with me? It's not, oh man, you're working, Randy, putting gas in a tank. Oh man, how am I ever going to get to start building the kingdom? You are building the kingdom. Brandon, when you're over fixing machines at the company you work and you're going around to different guys, their machine is broken. It's not, oh man, I'm in this dead-end job and how do I get from here to building the kingdom? You are building the kingdom. The question is, how am I going about building the kingdom while I'm adjusting this machinery, right? Dusty, you're wrenching on a car. It's not when do I get there, it's how do I do that right now? I am doing it right now. What does that look like? We have over-mystified discovery of God's will. So again, in chapter 4, I said 2.5 miles of wall can only get built one way, one stone at a time. That's the way it happens. Likewise, the only way we will impact the next 5 generations is to obey in the next 5 minutes. So here's a summary. Men, all of us, married or single, love, lead, tend, protect. Women, honor, companion, help, nurture, complete. Children, obey, follow, support, engage. This isn't rocket science. You with me? We do it right from here. Right from this spot. This church family, this is your good work. Don't come down from it. You hear me? This is who God has created you to be, to lead from this place, all of you, in whatever capacities you're leading. This is your good work. Don't come down from it. Do not reconsider your calling in the midst of fear and self-preservation. Don't start readjusting that plan because you think somebody's going to think a certain way about you or undermine you or it's going to cause you difficulty or pain. Do your job. So here's some, that kind of opens up the application for us. I'm just going to follow Nehemiah's here. Here's point number one for us to apply. Remember, you are a particular kind of person. You are this, therefore, you live this way. You are a particular person who has been called the son or the daughter of God. Remember, you're a particular kind of person. Because if you understand this point, then you can get 2 through 4. But if you miss this point, all you'll be doing is rearranging flesh dynamics. You'll only be just adjusting behavior. You following me? You're a particular kind of called out person. Know who you are in relationship to who God is. Identity precedes activity. Know your job, do your job, and do it generously. Second application for us, concern yourself with God's abilities and God's will, not men's. Abraham Lincoln once said, "If I am killed, I can die but once, but to live in constant dread of it is to die over and over again." Isaiah 54:17 says this, "No weapon that is fashioned against you shall succeed, and you shall refute every tongue that rises against you in judgment. This is the heritage of the servants of the Lord and their vindication from me, declares the Lord." You hear that? Do not fear men, do not concern yourself with what do these people want me to do. Listen to this verse again. "There is no weapon that is fashioned against you that will succeed. You shall refute every tongue that rises against you in judgment. This is the heritage. This is your gift. This is who you are as servants of the Lord. And their vindication is from me, declares the Lord." Or Jesus says it this way in Matthew 10, "Do not fear those who can kill the body, but cannot kill the soul." The third application is by way of inference, but it's important. Like I said, we are all leaders and followers. So here's point number three. Remember your leaders, consider their labor, and don't contribute to their trouble. So in relationship to all who follow, By the way, that's all of us. Nehemiah had a job to do. And some of the people, for the sake of their own agenda, were making his job very difficult. Don't be one of those people. When you follow somebody, follow them. If you've been called by the Lord to follow somebody, don't make it hard for them. Hebrews 13, 7 through 17 says, "Remember your leaders, those who spoke the word of God. Consider the outcome of their way of life and imitate their faith." The people in Nehemiah's time had completely violated, his opposers had completely violated these principles. Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever. Do not be led away by diverse and strange teachings. Verse 14. For here we have no lasting city. Listen to this. But we seek the city that is to come. Through him, then, let us continually offer up a sacrifice of praise to God, that is, the fruit of the lips that acknowledge his name. Do not neglect to do good and to share what you have, for such sacrifices are pleasing to God. Obey your leaders and submit to them, for they are keeping watch over your souls as those who will have to give an account. So let them do this with joy and not with groaning, for that would be of no advantage to you. So this is what Hebrews is saying. Don't judge your leaders based on their perspective on your pet issue. Rather, remember, recall the larger perspective of their whole lives, and then look at your issue in light of that larger context. You following me? If you're a follower, don't breathe fear and insecurity into the lives of those who lead you. It will be of no benefit to you. I'm not so sure that was a good decision. I don't think I'd do it that way. Well, Geshem the Arab, he says this about you. I don't know if you're capable of... I'm not really sure you got my best interest in mind. I'm not really sure you know me. Don't breathe fear and insecurity into the life of those who lead you. It will be of no benefit to you. Many modern examples could be called to make this point. But in Nehemiah, we see a prime illustration, a routine fault of those who follow. Nehemiah had sacrificed his position as a ring bearer. He traveled from Babylon. He's building alongside the people. He's doing so at the cost of his own comfort and financial loss. His whole purpose is to rebuild God's city for God's people so that justice and equity could come through God's truth. And how do many respond? See, they have lost sight. They're not remembering. They're not taking into context Nehemiah's whole life. You following me? They judge Nehemiah based on their personal agenda. They have lost sight of his heart and his actions and the good he is doing, and they're undermining it. It's of no advantage to them. What city will they live in where justice is going to be served? It is not the one that Artaxerxes is going to come in and enforce on them. It's going to be the one that Nehemiah's helping build in the name of the Lord. And they're undermining it. It's of no benefit to them. Lord, help us to make application. Remember your leaders, consider their labor. Don't contribute to their trouble. The fourth application: live out of truth and speak truth regardless of feeling or circumstance, and refuse to reconsider your identity and calling in the face of fear. We read this at the beginning. This is such a good passage, Psalm 37. This is so applicable to what we're reading in Nehemiah. Fret not yourselves because of evildoers. Be not envious of wrongdoers. I don't know if Nehemiah had this passage memorized, but he sure did live it out. For they will soon fade like the grass and wither like the green herb. Trust the Lord and do good. Dwell in the land and befriend faithfulness. Delight yourself in the Lord and he will give you the desires of your heart. Commit your way to the Lord. Trust him and he will act. He will bring forth your righteousness as the light and your justice as the noonday. Be still before the Lord and wait patiently for him. Fret not yourself over the one who prospers in his way, over the man who carries out evil devices. Do we not need to hear this today? Don't fear. Refrain from anger, forsake wrath. Fret not yourself, it tends only to evil, for the evildoer shall be cut off, but those who wait for the Lord will inherit the land. Thus saith the Lord. There's a lot that could be said here, but church, let's please meditate on this. Our biggest deterrent to not doing our job is not knowing what to do. It's knowing what to do and allowing fear and self-preservation to keep us from doing it. The biggest obstacle for us doing our job is not, I don't understand what I'm supposed to do. It's what you do know, you don't obey because you're afraid and you don't think it's going to go well for you. And the fifth point kind of grows out of that by way of application. Entrust yourself to God in prayerful dependence for both strength and justice. You are a particular kind of person. You have a job to do. You know how to do your job. Do it generously. And then pray, Lord, strengthen my hands for the work. I need you. I am powerless. We studied this together in men's workshop today. I am powerless without you. Strengthen my hands for the work. Father, there's some people that are opposing me. I'm doing my job. Help me do my job. Father, help them do their job. Hold me accountable for my job, and I'll let you hold them accountable for their job. Father, you have given us some great things to think about through your servant Nehemiah and the words that you have miraculously preserved and then kept for us that we might read them today and gain life. We thank you for the truth, the intricacies, the depth of your wisdom, and the hope of having it. Help us, Lord, strengthen our hands for the work. Help us to do it generously and joyfully and to trust you. For the sake of Christ, the building of your kingdom, that outsiders might say that work could only be done by a living God, and for our joy to participate, hear our prayers and answer us. Amen.